Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, many parents know the day will come when their children will grow up and they'll live independent lives. But for parents of children with intellectual and development disabilities, they're often faced with the constant worry about what will happen after they die. Well, joining me now to discuss some measures that might ease those worries is Andrea McNamara, Head of Private Client Law at EY Law. Good morning to you.
Good morning, lovely
to have you back.
Thank you.
The concept of death, it can be just a hard topic for any parent to talk about and think about. And we've had that conversation here when you've been in before. But it is particularly difficult for those who have children with additional needs. Do you find that in your own professional practice?
Absolutely. All the time I see that it's such a worry for parents where they have children who have additional needs or who are fully incapacitated. Mm-hmm. Because I suppose while the children or while the parents are alive, they feel, okay, we have a structure in place, we can look after them. But their worry is what happens when we're gone, when we're not around to look after them and if they are dependent on the parents. So I think doing a bit of planning, getting a proper structure in place can really help to ease those concerns.
Okay, so for anybody, having a structure in place for what happens after you die is really important.
Yes.
But in particular,
yes,
for these parents,
yeah,
you need to have a plan.
You do, because if you have a child who has additional needs, whether that might be on the lower end of the scale, that they may be vulnerable and have a level of capacity. So, for example, there may be a child who could hold down a part-time job and they could manage a couple of hundred euro a week, but they wouldn't have the capabilities to manage a large capital sum, and particularly an inheritance when their parents aren't around to guide them, I suppose. Or at the other end of the scale, you could have individuals who are completely incapacitated and they couldn't manage any level of funds. And if you have a child who falls anywhere within that scale, it wouldn't be appropriate when the parents are gone for them to receive a direct inheritance. So it's really important that the parents put in place a structure, and really the type of structure is a trust.
Okay.
So that the assets, instead of passing to that child directly, could pass into a trust and they could be managed by trustees for the benefit of that child. So the trustees can ensure that the child has somewhere to live, whether that's buying a property or renting a property for them. They can pay for all of their living expenses, pay for any medical costs, any care costs. So essentially, they're making sure that, you know, all of their needs are taken care of. But, you know, they're stepping into the parents' shoes effectively, because the child doesn't have the capacity to do that themselves.
And when the parents set up that trust, do they decide who the trustees are?
They do, yes. And the parents could either set up the trust while they're alive, or they could set it up under their will so that it would only take effect on death. But yes, they need to appoint the trustees, and then the trustees will be the people who manage that trust fund.
Okay, now, we've plenty of questions coming in on this, so let's go through some of them. We're finding it difficult to draw up a will when our youngest has special needs and will require lifelong care, but our older siblings are still minors and we obviously don't want to discuss it with them yet. Needless to say, a lot of sleepless nights worrying about her future and how we should divide the assets, especially considering who will care for her. Any advice appreciated?
Yeah, and that's a really common situation. So I suppose there's a few issues there. It sounds like all of these children are quite young. So that's something I see very frequently, is that parents feel, well, we don't actually know how our child's condition is going to develop over time. So at the moment, it might be, you know, in a certain way, but when they're in their 20s or 30s, they don't know, will their level of capacity improve or disimprove? So that's something mm-hmm. that just needs to be taken into account. So what I would say firstly is that they should make their wills based on their current circumstances and based on that child's current circumstances, and then keep the wills under review. So every few years, you know, consider, is this still correct? Is this still the right structure? Do we need to tweak this in any way? What in terms of how they should actually structure their will, they should put in place a discretionary trust for that child with special needs. And they need to appoint the trustees. So the trustees will be the people, as I mentioned, who will be managing the trust fund for the benefit
of
that child.
And is it common that the parents would name the siblings of the child with additional needs as the trustees, or some of the trustees?
If the siblings are adults, it is quite common, because I suppose they're usually the people who are closest to the relevant child. So if there's a good relationship between all of the children, that's probably the most common situation. But here, the other children, I think you said, are minors.
Yeah.
So they couldn't act as trustees. So they need to choose other people. Typically, it's family or friends. So it might be siblings of the parents or very close friends. But the, I think you said the other children are also minors. So actually these listeners should put another trust in place for those children because they're minors. And again, they wouldn't have legal capacity to manage assets because of, by virtue of the fact that they are minors. Mm-hmm. And what you could do, if they're struggling to determine how they should separate the trust or their assets between the two trusts, is that if they include their all of their children in the second trust, which is for the benefit of the other minor children, then there could be a top up of funds between the trusts if there's a commonality of beneficiaries. So actually it kind of lessens the burden of trying to decide exactly how much goes into one trust okay. and how much goes into the other trust.
But overall, you're saying you probably need to start acting on that as early as you can.
You really do, because I suppose, you know, as we've discussed before, Claire, none of us know when we're going to die. So, you know, again, it's just much more important in this situation if you have a child who will be incapacitated and won't mm-hmm. be able to look after themselves.
OK, this one, we have a daughter with special needs. I don't want her to lose any benefits in the event she receives bequests from my wife or I or anybody else. As I understand it, if she receives financial resources directly, she will lose benefits after the age of 16. Is that listener right?
That is my understanding. Now, I don't advise on state benefits, yeah. but what I would say is this type of trust that I'm suggesting for people with additional needs is called a discretionary trust. And beneficiaries of the discretionary trusts aren't deemed to be absolutely entitled to the assets in the trust. So it means that for the purposes of state for the purposes of means testing for state benefits, the assets in the trust aren't taken into account. So it's very important. It's almost like a holding structure. While the assets sit in the trust, they won't affect the beneficiary state benefits. If any assets are appointed out of the trust directly to that beneficiary, then those assets
They're
would
counted.
Be taken into account. Yeah.
Okay. So it's important to know what you're doing
yep.
and to get it right so that those things are not impacted
exactly.
adversely.
But impacted. This structure really does cater for that. And mm-hmm. it's also quite a tax efficient structure. So it can, you know, ensure that you can maximise tax reliefs. So definitely just it's important to get advice and make sure that you put that structure in place and that it wouldn't affect state benefits.
And it's called a discretionary trust.
Yes, a discretionary
That's
trust.
What you're
yep.
looking for if you need to go yep. up for advice on
it's
this.
It's the most flexible form of trust. So it could take account of a change in circumstances. So, you know, like I mentioned a moment ago, if a beneficiary's condition might change over time, the trustees could take that into account. And perhaps mm-hmm. if their condition improved, they could increase distributions to them so that they maintain a level of independence, which I think is really important.
Let's get to another one. So yep. this listener tells us that they have an autistic teen and it's too early to tell if they can hold a full-time job, but they've had trouble working part-time so far. Currently, our will leaves the house between the kids equally with lifetime access for all. I wanted to make sure my teen always has somewhere to live, but at the same time, we want to be fair to all of my children. Will this cause issues? If so, what's the best way to do it fairly? That's a tricky one.
In terms of fairness, the listener is leaving everything equally between the children. So I think that could be said to be fair, but there is an issue there in that she's leaving the house equally to all children. If the child with autism does not have capacity, they can't hold their share of the house themselves. So an application would have to be made to court to have what's called a decision-making representative appointed on that child's behalf. Because say if the other children wanted to sell that house,
yes.
the child couldn't consent. So they'd have to go to court, make this application, have somebody appointed on that child's behalf, and then that person would have authority to consent to the sale or not.
Mm-hmm.
So what that listener should really do is leave whatever assets they want to leave to that child into a discretionary trust again, because they may not have capacity to manage funds
okay.
directly.
So they may need to revisit what they've done already now,
yes,
you're saying.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, this listener says, we've paid off our mortgage, we have an adult son with a disability, how do we safeguard that his home won't be sold over his head and that he won't have to pay property tax on it. I'm not sure if we've enough information there to answer that question,
yes,
because it sounds
yeah.
like there are other beneficiaries involved there.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, if they have a son with a disability, whatever they're leaving to that son should go into a trust, not to that son directly, because he wouldn't have capacity if he doesn't have capacity.
Okay, now a couple of general ones
yep.
off topic, which
okay.
we expected, because lots of people get in touch, Andrea, when you're in with general inquiries. I'm a widow with two children and two stepchildren. Are my stepchildren considered strangers in terms of inheritance?
No, stepchildren are also included in the bracket of children for the purposes of inheritance tax.
Okay.
So they would be entitled to the 335,000 tax-free threshold.
Right, well, that's really important for people to know, because there's a significant difference, isn't there?
There is, yeah, absolutely. If they were strangers, it would just be €16,250 that they could receive tax-free.
Okay, and another general one, this listener is due to inherit a large amount of money, it's €200,000 plus. Should I get a will before this? I have no other assets except my car. I'm due to get married. If anything happened to me before I get the money, I'd want my partner to get my share and not my siblings. We don't have any children. So what should that person do?
I suppose it really depends. Your will speaks from date of death. So at the moment, she hasn't inherited that fund. If she were, God forbid, to pass away in the morning, then I think she said that her car is her only asset.
Yeah.
So she could certainly make a will to deal with her car, but it's probably more important after she inherits the assets, and then her estate would be more valuable. So more important that she could leave that to her partner.
So as soon as you get that money, that's when you make your will, but not before.
She could make it now, on the basis that hopefully she doesn't pass away before she receives this inheritance. And then, as I said, the will would speak from date of death. So whatever she owns at date of death would be governed by the will. So if she's received the inheritance, then the will could cover it.
Andrea, thank you, as always, for coming in with such great advice. That's Andrea McNamara, who's head of private client law at EY Law. We'll take a break before the news.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.